Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're with you until 12 noon this morning here on Sports Radio 1290, bringing you all the latest news and information from the hockey world. The NHL playoffs are well underway, and we are covering them top to bottom, and that's the focus of this program. I'm joined in studio by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, Michael Remus is operating the R desk, and producer Tim gets us on and off the air. Gentlemen, good morning.
Morning, Drew. It's been an interesting playoffs, I'd say. I think the most interesting part of the playoffs, Drew, has probably been the fact that no lead is safe.
No lead is safe. It's unbelievable. You've never seen unless you're a Vancouver Canuck. No lead is safe because 3-0 is this. It seems like
4-0.
It motivates teams to start playing, and they're just turning it on like nobody's business.
Yeah, yesterday, you know, it was a prime example.
That's right. Yesterday, when we'll get to the Philly Buffalo game, and I mean, you referenced the San Jose Los Angeles comeback from a couple nights ago, and of course we'll get to that later on in the program as we go series by series, team by team.
Team by team.
There you go. Best way to get in touch with us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is via Twitter, at Illegal Curve, twitter.com/Illegal Curve. You can also friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Or you can join Michael Remus in the Illegal Curve chat room. Go to www.illegalcurve.com. There's going to be a wholesome chat going on there where you can talk hockey with some of your favorite friends in the cyber world. Ezra Ginsberg, you're awfully quiet this morning. You're too busy on your brand new BlackBerry.
Wow. I was going to say that we should throw out the pin for the Illegal Curve BBM sessions.
You can throw out your own pin. We're not throwing out everybody else's pin.
But yeah, I got my BBM and it's unbelievable. I haven't put it down yet. I haven't had it. Like, when you go from no cell phone to BlackBerry, it's like, you know, it's like going to Asia. It's like a culture shock, you know. So it's been great.
You kidding me?
I'm really happy to be part of the BBM family. Now I can get all of... actually, you know what?
Now, Richard, you've already deleted Ezra off of BBM.
So annoying on there.
Yeah.
Constantly sending nonsensical messages.
I've had my BlackBerry for 3 days. I'm already deleted.
I'm surprised it took 3 days, to be perfectly honest. How many times did you guys just say the word hi back to each other?
Yeah, well, I'm just, you know, just wanting to see what Richie's up to. We hung out and watched hockey last night. I wanted to see if
you kept BBMing me from across the room. Hi. What's up? Hi. That's not a conversation. It's trying to watch the game. So I deleted you.
I can see how that would happen. I can see why that would be annoying.
It's all right. I've still got Drew. I've still got Remus.
I preemptively deleted you also. I just figured might as well delete you right off the start. Let's get underway on the program this fine Saturday morning by recapping last night in the NHL and looking ahead to today's quadruple header. So if you're a hockey fan, today is the day to sit in front of the couch and kick up your feet and watch some hockey. It was a very good Friday yesterday for the Buffalo Sabres and for the Nashville Predators. Let's start in Philly with Game 5 between the Sabres and the Flyers. The Sabres jumped out to a dominating 3-0 lead early in the first period, thanks largely to the Mr. Civ goaltending of Brian Boucher.
You have to really qualify, Drew, and you just did. In terms of the goaltending, you know, that game started 3-0 for Buffalo, but the first two goals allowed by Brian Boucher were horrific.
Yes,
they were. You know, they were minor league goaltending. It was minor league goaltending. They were poor goals. He put his team in a hole. The third goal wasn't great either, but it was a little bit more, you know, acceptable.
Yeah.
But the first two goals were one from the corner shot, and he was cheating to the middle on Rob Niedermeyer, and the second ones were basically from behind the net. Both times not covering the corner, you know, not up against the post. Basic goaltending. And you put your team in a hole. But at the same time, Drew, why should we be surprised?
There's no reason to be surprised at all.
I mean, people talk about, oh, Boucher had played well the games before. There's always a carousel in net in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That's never changed. And Brian Boucher has never been a standout netminder. Brian Boucher was their backup all season long, and he comes into this game and he's gonna have his good points and his bad points. Sure, those goals were terrible and they came at an inopportune time, but in the big scheme of things, when you invest no money in goaltending, and you have three netminders and you don't show any confidence in any of them, really, what are we to expect?
You know what the thing that's unfortunate is that if Buffalo ends up winning the series, and it comes down to that game five, where Boucher really did look worse than he's ever looked, then Philly will have to finally address their goaltending situation because...
I don't think they will, Ezzy. I mean,
look at the cap.
Look at the cap.
They can't.
I agree with you.
If they make some moves, sure they can, but the cap situation is such that they have a tough time doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Ezzy, that they should be, but they still refuse to. I was on Twitter last night, and a good friend of this program at the Goalie Guild, mm-hmm. Justin Goldman, has been on, really is an expert on goaltending. He knows a lot about goaltending, and his comments, I thought his tweet last night was quite apt, as he watched Boucher implode, and it was, there are no words to describe Boucher's lack of focus and mental preparation for this game. I would definitely pull him, and then in all caps, unacceptable.
I have no doubts about that.
I thought that was pretty, it was pretty apt. He just looked like it's rare to see a quote-unquote professional goaltender look so unprepared and so...
It's hard to say that it's a matter of mental preparation and he's just not ready for the game. Or he's just not very good. I mean, I have a hard time reading into whether Boucher was prepared last night or not. Some bounces didn't go his way, but he didn't play in the net as he was supposed to, but he's not that skilled of a netminder. If it were, say, a guy like Luongo, who we'll talk about later, or a guy like Brodeur, maybe then mental preparation is an issue, because these kind of goals never really go in, especially two in one game.
Right.
But with Boucher, are we that shocked? Is it mental preparation, or is it just talent?
But
you don't want to mistake preparation for talent.
At some point in time, though, if it was... To me, talent it comes to play when it's the great goalies make the great save, or the good goalies make the good save. This guy was just letting in shots that, frankly, with proper positioning,
right,
you and I could have saved.
That's the point, though. Is that preparation, or is that just the fact he's not a very good goaltender?
I have trouble believing that he's that bad of a goaltender. I think there's got to be something more to it.
When you're around a backup goaltender in the National Hockey League, Drew, a fringe backup goaltender in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
What you really are is you're going to have games where you look like a great starter and games you look like a minor leaguer. That's what you're getting.
It was beyond minor league, though, in my mind. That was the problem. It was beyond minor league. He just looked like he's never played net before, and with the way he was positioned.
When you don't invest any money in goaltending at all, and you have a three-goalie carousel, you don't know who it's going to be, and you're nobody really knows around the team. Nobody really knows around the coaching staff
and you're playing
who it's going to be. You're playing with fire.
Right.
And sometimes it works. See last season. Sometimes it doesn't. See many seasons before that.
And we'll talk more about goaltending when we break down the Buffalo-Philadelphia series in more detail.
Sure.
Buffalo has now taken a 3-2 lead. They have an opportunity to go back on home ice, I believe Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm just going to double-check that.
And, Drew, to me, the most unfortunate the most unfortunate thing about Brian Boucher's shaky goaltending is how it trickles down to the rest of the team, because Philadelphia, they get down to Buffalo at home. You already lost game four, and you don't have Pronger. You don't have Carter. It starts in net. Obviously, playoffs don't come down to just one player, one goaltender. Mm. But when your goaltender's that bad, that really was that's why they lost that game.
Well, to their credit,
he lets those goals in early. If he makes those saves, they have a chance. He doesn't give them a chance if he lets those goals
in. To their credit, though, Philly came back and they made it a game, and Buffalo won it in overtime. But it just goes to show, if even Philly was getting moderate goaltending, they should be clearly ahead in the series.
Ryan Miller's been very, very good.
Very
in this
good.
Series.
He's been stellar. He's been absolutely unbelievable. It'll be interesting. Game six back in Buffalo tomorrow afternoon with that raucous home crowd. Can they close it out on home ice? They have as good as...
We'll see.
Exactly. Tomorrow, 3 o'clock. Nashville at Anaheim yesterday. Nashville 4-3 over Anaheim in overtime also. Both games went to overtime yesterday. First time Nashville's ever won a game five, and the first time Nashville's ever won a game in overtime. They go back to... Tennessee with the chance to close it out on home ice as well. Another game that's tomorrow night. Really, we're going to break down that series again in more detail. It's one of those series that people might not be watching for whatever reason, because it's not sexy, but it's just been a fabulously played series.
Higher scoring series than maybe people thought.
Yeah.
Interesting game yesterday in that Anaheim got a beautiful goal from Ryan.
Oh, beautiful.
Took a 2-1 lead and then a 3-2 lead. Blew both of them.
That's right.
Can't do that in the playoffs.
No.
And then lost in overtime.
Nashville scored to tie the game with the empty net with less than a minute to go.
On a beautiful play. What happened on that play was the faceoff was in the left dot.
Yeah.
Mike Fisher, pretty good, you know, won that draw. And it was a set play. People realized it was a set play. And the draw was won back to the right defense when Cody Franzen, who made a perfect quick pass in the set play to Shea Weber, who also didn't wind up with a huge slap shot.
Still
for the kids that listening,
right.
In all honesty, instead of for the big slap shot, put the puck on net quickly, through a screen, just went in top corner.
That's right.
You know, there was a blown assignment in terms of somebody closing on Weber. I believe it might have been Salani, actually, closing on Weber. But regardless, the play was organized well.
Do you think
Barry Trotz also, interestingly enough, didn't take a timeout before the play?
Because the Anaheim had just iced the puck. Their defense, their team was tired because they couldn't do a line change.
And Koivu was on taking the faceoff. Now, if there's a timeout, you still cannot change your players.
But they get a rest.
You get a rest.
Do you think that it was actually a blown assignment, or do you think that the play was so bang-bang that they got it through there before Salani?
I think it was bang-bang.
Salani,
I think that we were watching this together last night. It really was a perfect set play.
You know, the left winger for Nashville on that play is running interference on the right winger for Anaheim and not letting the right winger get to the point.
No, but because what happens is the wingers usually stand on the same side on the left in front of the net. Right? NHL formations work is that they put two wingers on the front of the net and then one bounces out. Now, Salani, if he's the right winger, which he is, he plays right wing, he went out to close on Franzen, and then Franzen made the pass to Weber. If Salani is covering his man in the formation, he is supposed to be going to Weber. Now, if Franzen's the first guy, then he tried to close on him. But what happened, Weber is a more dangerous shot, although Franzen is a very good offensive defenseman. Salani is supposed to be closing on Weber, especially the more dangerous shot. So that's probably what happened. Carlisle alluded to there being a blown assignment.
Okay. I just thought with all the bodies in the way there everything else, it would be hard to get to the point that quickly, especially with how quickly that shot was released by Shea Weber.
A very good skater.
Yeah.
It's hard to place blame on somebody, when a play is executed that well.
That's right.
And the shot got through and it went through, and Emery did not see it.
I thought it was good execution more than it was
a blown
assignment on that front.
I agree.
Let's quickly, so Nashville takes that 3-2 lead. They have a chance to win it on home ice tomorrow. Today in the NHL, the game starts at 11 o'clock Winnipeg time, is the first game. That's on our that's a Tampa Bay at Pittsburgh, with Pittsburgh having a chance to put that series away, I believe, in five.
Bye-bye, Tampa.
New York at Washington at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
It's a great quadruple header.
Washington with a chance to put that series away today as well.
Yep.
Montreal at Boston, that's game five, 2-2 so far there, so it's a best of three now. The road team has won every game there, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And then the nightcap,
Los Angeles at San Jose, the Sharks have a chance to put the Kings away on home ice.
And
you want to make a run here. If you're the Sharks,
You
got to take care of business.
You win it tonight, so you don't have to worry about going back.
We'll talk about the Canucks later on. But
the truth is,
losing the game five when you're up 3-0 in that situation, game four isn't really a big deal. You got to go home anyways, right? You got to go home, you play one more game, you stay a little bit more fresh. It's losing game five and going back to Chicago, adding extra miles on your body.
And only losing, Richie, getting spanked 5-0.
And that's on the plane and physically. So, I mean, you're doing yourself a disservice. And a team like the Red Wings, who does not do that and takes care of business.
They'll have a week off, probably even maybe a week or 10 days off.
And it's going to be beneficial to an older team.
Absolutely, it's going to be. Let's go to break. The guests I should mention before we head out to commercial, Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times is going to join us at 10 o'clock this morning, and Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail to discuss the new NHL TV deal will join us at 10:30.
I always love talking media.
Yeah, and Bruce is a great media guy
for
the Globe and Mail, so we're thrilled to have him on. The best way to get in touch with us, at Illegal Curve on Twitter, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. When we come back after these commercial messages, Washington at the New York Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Fifteen in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Still to come on the program, Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times covering the Flyers and Sabres series, and Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail discussing the NHL's new U.S. television contract. right now.
Washington Capitals versus the New York Rangers.
That'll be the first series we break down on the show today. We're going series by series, team by team. The Washington Capitals against the New York Rangers, the 1-8 series in the Eastern Conference. The Capitals have a 3-1 lead in the series, have a chance to end it on home ice this afternoon. Really, this is should be a 2-2 series if not for that epic collapse of the New York Rangers in Game 4 on home ice, and then the blown play in overtime.
No leads safe right now.
The Rangers, when you have a 3-0 lead, when you have a 3-0 lead on home ice in the third period and the raucous Madison Square Garden crowd behind you, you cannot lose that lead.
No, I mean, the truth is this team has been covering, Washington's kind of been controlling the play for the most part, Drew. Yeah, at least, you know,
the time that
matters. Yeah, exactly. You know, at even strength.
Yeah.
Scores close, which is a predictive of future success. But even so, I mean, the series has really been, game one was overtime.
Yeah.
Semin's goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blown play by, I would say, one of the wingers in the Rangers that left Mark Stahl to dry. Game two, Washington won, but a close game. Game three, Rangers scored with just under 3 minutes or 2 minutes left
to win. Yeah.
And game four was in overtime. It's been a very close game. The series could be going either way.
It should be 2-2.
When you're up 3-0
on home
at home against Washington, you have Henrik Lundqvist in net. You need to allow 4 goals to lose the game.
Four goals in the span of about 16 minutes or so.
With a world-class goaltender.
Yeah.
Absolutely correct about that. You should be 2-2. The Rangers' defense, Drew, and we talked about it on the show previewing the series. Stahl and Girardi are great. I mean, you really can't beat Stahl or Girardi.
Right.
But
the drop-off after that.
But the drop-off after that is, I mean, they're sheltering Brian McCabe. Brian McCabe and Matt Gilroy. Gilroy has been in and out of the lineup all year. Doesn't have the trust of John Tortorella. Then you have Brian McCabe, who's essentially been sheltered and has been playing almost as much, you know, half as much power play time as he plays regular time. You're taxing your top guys a bit, and you're going to lose the other matchups, meaning when you're playing Stahl and Girardi up against Ovechkin's line, the other matchups are going to hurt you.
Absolutely. I mean, we well documented the shortcomings that the New York Rangers have. But, I mean, at some point in time, when you're up, I'm not sure how they got to be up 3-0. I mean, I know how they got up to be 3-0, but you'd never expect to be up 3-0 in the third period on home ice.
Yep. Against the better team.
Against the better team. So, admittedly, it's fine that, you know, that Washington's been controlling the play, as they should. They're the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
Right. That's right.
New York has to do something. I don't know what it is, but, I mean, I'll turn it over to you because you have a better eye for that. They have to do something to prevent Washington from being able to come back. And I know that the defense is you're thin on defense.
Suspect.
And you're suspect. I don't know what it is in terms of your forwards and, you know, how they can assist you. But, I mean, if you keep Washington's going to control the play. There's really no doubt about that. You just have to keep their scoring chances to a minimum. Because you have to figure that with Henrik Lundqvist in net, you're in pretty good shape in net there.
You are, Drew, but, you know, this Ranger team doesn't exactly... One of the ways to play defense, Ezzy, is to control the puck and sustain pressure in the offensive zone.
Sure. If you have the puck...
Are they doing that well? Not really.
But you expect that they wouldn't do that. So it can't come to as a shock to John Tortorella.
Sure, but they do miss a guy like Callahan who can control the puck along the boards.
Of course.
And who can shot block and all those things. But their offense overall, Drew, nobody has over a point a game in the series.
Yeah.
The leading scorer is Brandon Dubinsky. Gabrick has been... And set, you know, pretty invisible for the most part.
No, he's helping Washington score goals on his own team.
And where are the other guys? Derek Stepan has been nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Nowhere to be found. And he's playing 21 minutes a game. He has no points, and he's -4. I know the plus-minus statistic is very flawed. But even so, he's brought nothing to the table in terms of offense. You know, they try and use Sean Avery. He hasn't done anything. He's made some bad turnovers in the offensive zone. Sorry, in the defensive zone. I just don't see this team right now is able to sustain enough offense.
But you're up 3-0 in the third period on home ice. And I'm going to harken back to that. What can John Tortorella do to help let his forwards help his defense to keep that lead, to maintain that lead?
But the thing is, maybe that in itself is an issue, though. For a team like the Rangers, who just limped into the playoffs, who they're obviously missing Callahan, their team that Richie have struggled to score goals all year. Their strength is in their goaltending and their defense. Maybe that in itself is the problem, that at that point, you shouldn't be just trying to hold on to the lead. You should be, you know, going for the jugular, so to speak, Drew. And to me, the Rangers are the. There were mistakes in that game. That's why they lost the game, obviously. But to me, this is a team that doesn't really have the killer's edge, whatever you want to call it. And they're not a team, to me, that matches up against. I really before and once again, I picked the Rangers to win the series, but that was based on certain guys elevating their game. And when you have the top guys like Gabrick, Prosper, to me, the only guy that's really been good on offense is Dubinsky. Mm-hmm. That's the only guy that's been there every single night in, night out in four games. He's the only guy he's the leader of the team. He's the only guy that's really, you know, every time Dubinsky's out there, he's going to give you a good shift. Well, with Gabrick, you don't know that.
No, you don't know. Gabrick's an enigma, and it's unfortunate because he's got all the talent.
And
he made,
you know, that play is lots. Much has been made about the play which caused the overtime goal. And Gabrick, was he trying? You know, I don't necessarily think, he wasn't hustling too much in the back check. Well, they had the man-to-man coverage.
Yeah.
Gabrick was coming in. He was trying to help out.
It was a fluke.
Push it into the corner.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was pushed into the corner. The puck popped up into Chimera. It was a fluke. Yeah, I agree.
Drew, I can't kill him that much for that. I really can't. I mean, I can kill him for a lot of other things. The fact he's got a goal and an assist through four games. Through four games so far.
A couple players I'd like to talk about in terms of Washington I've been thoroughly impressed with. Marcus Johansson, a terrific young player. Great on the handle. He's really looked good. Jason Arnott's really been a nice addition to the team. He's put up a power play goal. He has been able to play good, responsible minutes. And the Washington defense, Drew, can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
It's much improved. And we've talked about it before. And it should be brought up again. It's a team.
Yeah.
You think about adding Scott Hanna. Scott Hanna has gave them solidified things. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And they're able to put people in positions to succeed.
That's right. They're exactly. Scott Hanna's a professional. He knows. I mean, you're not going to see him on the score sheet ever.
No, never.
Never. And if he is on the score sheet, that's a bonus. But you can't expect it, and you're not worried about it.
That's right.
But he solidifies things. He makes this responsible play in his own zone. And he just probably, his veteran leadership, it's a stunningly young defense.
Yep.
With the veteran leadership that he provides, it really cannot be overstated. What's interesting, I'm sort of, you would expect that Washington being, the number one seed, they'll take care of business and end the series today on home ice.
You never know.
You never know.
Last year they blew a 3-1 lead.
Right. You never know, but
looking good for them.
They should.
Yeah,
they should.
And, you know, everything else being equal, they should. Add Dennis Wiedemann back onto this defense. Because he's getting, he'll be back sometime in the second round probably. That's the hope. Put Dennis Wiedemann back on this defense. This Washington team might be suited for a long run into the playoffs more than any other year.
I would agree with that. They're you add a guy like Scott Hanna, Drew. What he gives you is gives you quality, even strength minutes.
Yeah.
He's leading the team in shorthanded minutes by a ton, and that's so important.
That's right.
Because a lot of the Caps defensemen are not exactly, the best defensively. They move the puck extremely well, but they're not the best defensively. And when you're able to add a guy like that, this is what you do, Drew. You're playing Mike Green basically the same minutes as Scott Hanna at even strength.
Yeah.
But you're logging Mike Green's getting big minutes on the power play, more than double any other defenseman.
Yeah.
But Hanna's getting more than double any other defenseman in terms of shorthanded time.
It works well. It's a good balance.
It's a good balance. What I'm saying is they have the versatility to play guys in situations to succeed. You're not thrusting guys into roles where they're not capable of handling.
You don't want to see Scott Hanna on your power play. You don't want to see Mike Green have to be defensively responsible on your penalty kill.
You don't have to thrust guys like John Carlson, great young player, into too much pressure offensively on the power play because Mike Green's there to handle it. You can throw forwards on the point.
You know, if you add in Dennis Wiedemann and if Buffalo takes care of Philly, all of a sudden, Washington really does look like they should be the favorite to come out of the East.
Not really. Now, of course, that depends on one name.
Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Of course. But, I mean, who knows about that? I don't see Crosby being any closer to returning.
I don't necessarily either, Drew. I would tend to agree with you there. In terms of the Rangers, Drew, if they're going to come back, as they're going to come back, Staal and Girardi have to continue to match up against those players, but the Rangers are going to need a breakthrough performance from some of their offensive players.
I agree with that.
Marian Gabrick is going to have to be the main reason why they come back.
See, I disagree. I think it's got to be Henrik Lundqvist.
Well, I was going to say, there's two players. It's Marian Gabrick and it's Henrik Lundqvist.
He's got to steal the series at this point.
Gabrick needs to give them offense. Because Gabrick needs to give them offense.
Yeah.
And Lundqvist needs to make up for some of the blemishes of the poor 3-6 defense.
That's right. Lundqvist has to stand on his head. I think even if Gabrick picks it up offensively, Lundqvist has to be insane.
That's why I always think when we're going through these series, I think that's to me that means they're not coming back. When you're mentioning one guy has to pick it up, when you talk about Vancouver, you talk about Detroit, you never say, oh, Datsyuk has to be on. I mean,
they have more depth.
And that's why I think I personally made a mistake in this series, because the Rangers, I mean, whatever it is, I think that they're dependent on guys that are inconsistent. And another guy like Prosper. Prosper can't be your second best offensive player. He just can't at his age.
Is interesting in that he was never fast to begin with, and he looks slower due to injury.
Right.
And the Washington Capitals are a skating team, guys.
And when you can skate and you're playing against a guy who can't skate that well,
you limit yourself to essentially power play success, or the ability to have power play success. Yeah. And the truth is when you're relying on that, you're Alexei Kovalev.
That's right. And that's not a recipe for success at any point in time. Let's go to break. When we come back after these commercial messages, we're going to break down the Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay series. They get actually underway in an hour and a half. Jeez, Louise, that's an early start time. An hour and a half Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay Game 5. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the program, 9:30 in the morning. Still to come, Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times talking about the Philly-Buffalo series. Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail discussing the new U.S. television deal. You can find us in studio at Illegal Curve on Twitter, twitter.com/Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve.
The Pittsburgh Penguins versus the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Guys, where did Remus go? I think he fell asleep in the other room.
No, he's running the R desk.
Is he?
Yeah, there's a good chat going on
there.
There's
no desk.
There is.
It's a table.
www.illegalcurve.com. You can join the chat going on there. That way, you can talk some hockey with some of your favorite friends on this Saturday morning.
Remus is actually in a room. It's just an empty room with, like, speakers that don't work, microphones that don't work. The phone, like, the cord's been cut. Like, there's just, like, boxes.
What is he,
like...
the Phantom of the Opera?
I've never seen the Phantom of the Opera. Would you like to go sometime?
Not with you.
Where does it play? MTC? Manitoba Theater Center? Community Center?
Alrighty.
What was the second one you said? Yeah. Next topic.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Les Miserables?
I have, twice.
Master of the...
Vegas?
No. Forget it. Can we talk about hockey, please?
Les Mis? Apparently it's got a great soundtrack.
That was like 1994, is he?
Well, the French Revolution was a little bit before that, but...
fair enough.
Thank you. Anyways, Tampa Bay-Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh with a 3-1 lead over Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay's done.
This has sort of been a dull series.
Yeah, well, that's what Pittsburgh wants it to be, Drew, when you don't really have a lot of goal scoring. but the truth is, Drew, is that Pittsburgh's been controlling the puck more than anybody when it matters in terms of close scores. Now, I mean, this is a series that Pittsburgh... Tampa Bay can't sustain any kind of offense, and I think I would attribute that not only to the Pittsburgh system, but I would really attribute that to Pittsburgh's top four defense has been absolutely tremendous. If you saw last game, Tampa Bay scored 2 goals. St. Louis had a beauty, and then they scored, I forget who, right before, to tie the game in the third period. This is both goals, Drew, were scored against the Lovejoy-Niskanen combination that plays a total of 12 and 10 minutes a game, respectively. 12 minutes for Niskanen, 10 minutes for Lovejoy.
Yeah. When they get the matchups
that they want, and that's especially easier at home, which they're playing today, where they're playing today, and you get one of, Martin Mihailuk or Letang or pick against
You're talking when Pittsburgh can get the matchups they want.
When Pittsburgh gets those two defensive pairings.
When they get the final change.
Against the Kavalier line, Stamkos line, sometimes they're playing together. But regardless, against their top two lines,
yeah.
Tampa Bay is having trouble sustaining any type of offense.
So they're
more of a one kind of hit offense as opposed to a sustain the pressure type offense.
You're saying right now that the Pittsburgh top four, the top four defense, the first two defensive pairings, are beating the top two forward lines on the the Tampa Bay Lightning.
But, yeah. Drew, they're getting offense from one player. Martin St. Louis getting all their goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, where's Stamkos? Where's Le Cavalier?
Stamkos has not been good in this series.
When we talked to Rick Peckham, he was talking about, okay, you know, look out for a guy like Teddy Purcell or a Nate Thompson. Okay, I mean, where are those guys? I mean, Richard is absolutely right. Pittsburgh is as they want this series low scoring. They want it boring. They want to frustrate Tampa Bay's number one guys. And if you look at that line, Richie, I think this isn't talked about enough either. That top line of Stamkos, St. Louis, and Downey is a small line. I mean, I interviewed Stamkos at the beginning of the year when they played an exhibition game. He's not a big guy.
No, he's
the biggest guy on that line.
Yeah.
St. Louis is a fit guy. He's in great shape for his age, but he's small. And when you're talking about Pittsburgh's top four, these are big, talented defensemen. And Tampa Bay has, I mean, Richie talks a lot about that, but that's really important as far as sustained offense goes because, when you're creating offense, that's not just necessarily scoring goals. That's creating pressure and establishing establishing what you're going to do in a game, and they're not doing that. Pittsburgh is without Crosby, without Malkin. Pittsburgh doesn't have a lot of offense, and they're finding a way to just completely dominate Tampa Bay on the boards. And I think that's a huge part of it. That line is getting physically outplayed and basically psychologically dominated.
Well,
right now.
I think the most important stat you need to look at is that the Tampa Bay Lightning have two players in their entire team that have more than 1 point at even strength in the series. Do you want to guess? One of them is St. Louis. That's easy. Who's the other one, Drew?
I'm going to say Eric Brewer.
Yeah. Are you looking at the same thing I am?
No, but I'm guessing. I'm looking at the stats.
It's Eric Brewer.
Drew's actually on his LinkedIn account.
Drew, you want to know how many points Steven Stamkos has at even strength this series?
Zero.
Do you want to know how many points Ryan Malone has at even strength this series?
Well, he's got 0 points in the series, so that's an easy answer.
Yeah, how many goals Vincent LeCavalier has at even strength?
Zero.
Gagne has at even strength?
Zero.
You getting the point here?
Yeah. Their best players aren't playing. It's that simple. I mean, you look at it's really thin. I mean, St. Louis showed up. St. Louis, full marks, 6 points, four games.
Always does.
He's there for the big games. After that, the drop-off. I mean, LeCavalier's got a goal and two assists. He's been relatively inconsequential. And then you talk about the interview we did with Rick Peckham, the play-by-play guy for the Tampa Bay Lightning. He mentioned, Teddy Purcell, 1 point. He mentioned Steve Downey, who, granted, was suspended for one of the games, but he got 1 point.
But he did that to himself.
Stamkos has been invisible. Stamkos, I can't get over.
He looks tired.
A couple of years in a row now.
Yeah, I'm not even
he's sort of dropped
even,
off in the
gonna,
second
I'm
half
not
of the year.
I'm not even going to say he looks tired. He just doesn't look confident. He never, he's quick, but he doesn't seem to be confident. And I find it quite odd, actually, that, you watch some of the game and they're utilizing him on the right side of the point on the power play.
I noticed that, yes.
And I realize that teams, generally Stamkos will play in his off wing, which is the left side, kind of high slot, looking for a one-timer.
Yeah.
And I realize that teams, guard against that, and they try and block the seam. But I don't find him that useful at the top right side of the power play. If you put him in the left side on his off wing where he succeeds, and Pittsburgh has to really take away from that strength, then at least by taking away from that strength, something else opens up for you.
They seem to be playing into a weakness by taking him out of the slot area for the one-timers.
If you want to equate it to, remember Brian McCabe on Toronto? He had a great slap shot and a one-timer, and teams didn't take it away for a while. He had a huge year. Then they adjusted to him. Okay, so they've adjusted to Stamkos.
Yep.
But even so, if you remember when they adjusted to McCabe, the high forward was closing on McCabe.
Right.
But if the high forward is closing on McCabe, that means they're more of a seam pass for the other player. So there's more. So if they take away the seam pass from Stamkos, there should be somebody available high for a one-timer, and if you get a screen, should be able to create offense. I just feel like they're not necessarily putting him in a position to succeed, or alternatively, they're not putting their team in a position to succeed because Stamkos, by putting him in a weak spot, you have other guys who are playing in a weak spot.
Look, if the Pittsburgh defense is focused on, if they say, we're not going to let Steven Stamkos beat us, which is fine. Lots of teams always say, if they beat us, so be it, but it's not going to be this guy, whoever this guy is.
Right.
Tampa Bay seems to be saying, okay, we're not even going to make you work to not let him beat you. And that seems to be a coaching error on Guy Boucher's part.
Yeah, I like Boucher as a coach a lot. Bilesma's a heck of a coach, though.
I think Bilesma's outcoached him here.
It's a little bit of a strategic advantage. And if you want to know about the X's and O's of this series, Mike Colligan, who we had on the show a few weeks ago, writes for the Hockey Writers, has been doing an excellent job of breaking down the X's and O's, the strategy, you know, Tampa's 1-3-1, how they've changed it for certain situations, how Pittsburgh adjusts to it, how the puck gets into the zone, what the problems are. He gets in very good detail about the X's and O's, and I hope Remus will put that up on the website so people can read that. Because if they don't, and it gets really into the details, so I don't want you to read the first two paragraphs and then bail out because it's a little bit too complicated. He does a good job of explaining it, and it sets a nice background for how the series has unfolded.
So you can watch the game with a more educated eye.
That's right.
You can see what we're talking about when you watch that game this morning in an hour
and
20 minutes.
And you watch this game, watch for the matchups, because Pittsburgh's going to be at home.
You will not see Ben Lovejoy and Niskanen on the ice against St. Louis and LeCavalier.
A prime example yesterday, Drew, is from yesterday's game. Randy Carlyle at home is able to get the Ryan line out against Kevin Klein and Bloom or Cody Franzen and Shane O'Brien because he's playing at home.
The last change.
And you know, lots of teams, you know, if it's a middle of the zone, if you're getting a faceoff in the neutral zone, it's really easy for the defenseman to pop off and new defenseman to pop on. But if you're going to switch the offense or defense in, you know, the offensive or, you know, in the offensive zone, and you get sustained pressure, the defenseman can't get off. So that's the advantage of playing at home. One of the advantages of playing at home.
Yeah, and they seem to be doing a very good job at. Dan Byles, underrated always as a coach for whatever reason, but he really, I think, next to Mike Babcock, he might be the second best coach in the NHL right now.
And Drew, you know what's really, we're touching on good points here, and they're really valid because this is a team that was an offensive powerhouse, and now that they've changed their style, and now they've found a style where they rely on suffocating and taking away space. I mean, when you got Aaron Asham, I think Aaron Asham is leading the team in goals right now. Isn't he? There's nobody that has more than two goals on the Penguins. They're just winning. They're playing a great team system of hockey, and Tampa Bay is not. They're not really figuring anything out because these games are not. I mean, in this series, we talked about this when we previewed the series. This was going to be a tough series to call, and I don't necessarily think Pittsburgh has outplayed them that
much.
I would say that Pittsburgh's outplayed them.
They've locked
them
down.
But when you look at the goals scored against, I mean, it's not, these aren't blowouts.
Tell you what, it's a credit
We should point out the fact that, while I think Pittsburgh has played them fairly handily for the most part, it's one bad goal, you know, Rolison goal away from possibly being 2-2.
That was a terrible goal. That's right. That's fair to point out. I think it's a credit to the front office and the coaching staff of the Penguins, though, that they've prepared their team and built their team in such a way that they can lose Crosby and Malkin, and they have enough skill set on that team that they can just change the style of play and really not skip a beat.
One other thing to note, Pittsburgh was one of the most penalized teams in the National Hockey League during the regular season. Out of the 16 teams in the playoffs, look where they rank, sixth.
Also, it helps that Matt Cook isn't there.
No. How many games has Derek Englund played?
Has he played any? I don't think he's played any.
Exactly. And those are your two penalty minute eaters, right?
You don't expect Derek Englund to play.
Exactly.
But as you look at them, and I guess my point there is, you have 11 minutes in penalties per game, okay?
Yeah.
But you've taken only 17 minor penalties, which is I think fifth best in the playoffs so far. My point is, what we talked about before was that Tampa's offense centered around their power play.
Yep.
And you have Pittsburgh's taken the fourth least minor penalties in the playoffs so far. Now they've played four games. Some teams have played five. Take that into account. But if Tampa Bay's offense is centered around their power play and you're not putting them on the power play and they can't produce at even strength, how are they going to beat you?
Leave it right there. When we come back after this break, we're going to talk about Philly Buffalo. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You know that song?
No, I have no idea. 9:48 in the morning.
State
Welcome
of Love
back.
And Trust?
Dude, what is that song?
State of Love and Trust Pro Jam.
Oh. Well, there's no 0% chance.
It's a good thing Tim's playing good music because we got a horrible host.
Wow.
It's a lot of hate
that
there,
was
Ezzy.
Mean.
If you got hate in your heart, let it out.
All of a sudden, you're going to be sensitive?
Well, that was a little bit harsher than normal.
Before we go to...
Are you crying?
That was a little bit harsher than normal.
Yeah, I agree. Before we go to the next preview, we're going to Philly Buffalo. Can we quickly talk about...
Sorry, Drew.
Drew's appearance and of course, support for the Liberal Party.
That was good work.
Drew had an appearance on CBC.
This is like 3 weeks
and
ago.
Last week we had it queued up. For whatever reason, the clip didn't play, but I think Remus has done a good job of preparing the clip this week. What was the main thing that Drew said about that? About the Drew analyzed the prime ministerial, is that what they term it?
The English language leaders debate.
English language leaders debate. And what were Drew's thoughts about who won?
Mr. Ignatieff, I have no doubts about that.
Everybody, it took you guys 3 weeks to put this together. Are you happy now?
So, Drew, you're a fan of Mr. Ignatieff?
Yeah, undoubtedly.
He just looks like a stud.
I didn't say that. I don't know what that's from. I don't know what that's from. But that's a complete. I'm being misquoted on the air.
Drew, do you have any doubts about Mr. Ignatieff?
Can we move on to the Philly Buffalo series?
Mr. Ignatieff is a stud? That's a little disturbing.
I think Mr. Ignatieff would be a better goaltender for the Philadelphia Flyers now than who they have right now.
Good segue.
Hey now. There we go. Anyways, let's go to Philly Buffalo.
The Philadelphia Flyers versus the Buffalo Sabres.
Never really understood the background music to that series. It seems a little bit different than every other series. But Philly Buffalo, year in, year out, year in, year out, Philly goaltending rears its ugly head.
Right.
We talked about it when we reviewed last night, but Game 6, going back to Buffalo, Ryan Miller has been a rock this series.
Sure has.
There's no sign of Jeff Carter or Chris Pronger. We're going to talk about that with Anthony Sanfilippo coming up next segment.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me Buffalo should win this series tomorrow afternoon.
Mr. Miller, without a doubt. It's gonna come down to Mr. Miller for sure. He has been stoning the Flyers, and the Flyers have completely lost their confidence in holding leads. And as far as I'm concerned, the Carter injury coupled with the shaky goaltending. I mean, Brian Boucher. We predicted this. We predicted that Bobrovsky was going to have issues, and if he had issues, he'd be in. I think I even said that if he struggled in the first period. Boucher would come
really,
in.
Yeah.
But now Bobrovsky's out, relegated to, I think, the Philadelphia Phantoms of the AHL. And now Leighton, they're going to have to go with Leighton. I would be shocked if Anthony Sanfilippo says anything different, Drew, because
I agree with you, Desi.
Boucher cannot. I mean, Philly's defense is that's one of the best defenses, even without Pronger.
Well, without Pronger.
It's still a pretty good defense. Like,
it's not bad.
Even without Pronger.
Pretty.
The Philly team is better than the Buffalo team. Philly is better than Buffalo without Pronger, even without Pronger.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I have no doubts.
Mr. Ignatieff, without a doubt.
Top to bottom, Drew, you're probably, obviously, the goaltending is the biggest difference there.
Oh, but the biggest goaltending was coming into the series. This isn't news.
The question is without Pronger, without Carter,
just lost Carter last game. So
Buffalo's got a pretty good offense. I mean, I said Philly in seven, and you were skeptical that Buffalo give him a run. Buffalo is a good team. Buffalo, I honestly believe that, you know, I don't know if they're going to win the series or not. Nobody really does, obviously. But this is not a team that's an easy out by any means.
I didn't think it'd be an easy out.
The interesting part to me, Drew, was watching this game really closely yesterday, watching this team, was the defense. I have to say somebody who really impressed me.
The defense on Buffalo.
Yeah, the defense on Buffalo specifically, excuse me. Somebody who really impressed me is Chris Butler.
Well, we talked about it last week with Mike Harrington. I was going to say the same thing.
And Chris Butler plays with Tyler Myers.
Yeah.
Especially even strength, they play together. Shoots left. I mean, I know he kind of blew an assignment there on the third goal, which Versteeg lifted his stick and ended up in the tying goal. But really smart defenseman, makes a smart play. I really like his reads. He's making good reads. Nothing special, nothing to write home about, but a solid stay-at-home defenseman. And I thought he really played a good game last night. I think Philly has to do a better job of exploiting the Gragani-Leopold combination. That's a second combination on Buffalo, Drew. And while they both move the puck very well, defensively, they're pretty questionable. Gragani, I have questions about
Gragani especially, I think, defensively.
I have questions about his lateral movement. He seems to be beat wide a lot,
yeah.
But he moves the puck well. Leopold's not the strongest guy either. So that, is a weakness. That's their second pairing, Drew. That's even before going to Weber and Montador, who are generally sheltered at even strength and then are logging penalty-killing time because they block shots, etc. The defense on Buffalo was a question I had to begin with. And we can exclusively take away the Buffalo the Philly goaltending issues.
Okay. I don't think you can, but okay.
And I know Carter obviously is a huge loss here. But Philly still has depth on offense. Philly's second line, whatever it may be, because they really are three top lines,
yes,
has to take advantage. Their second and third lines have to take advantage of the lack of depth on the Buffalo defense.
Especially on home ice last night, where, as we were talking about, they get last change and they can do that, and they can match up. And they can match up. But I think it just boils, you know, no matter how much they match up, when you have Buffalo taking, I mean, Buffalo's not getting a ton of chances, but they don't need a ton of chances because Philly can't make a save. Yesterday, Leighton in overtime. And then Michael Leighton is who he is. You know, makes the first save. You can't kick out a rebound like that.
It was a bad rebound, but Matt Carl's got to take Tyler Ennis. Matt Carl's got to have an awareness of who is coming down the wing for a rebound. He did not box out, to use a basketball term. Ennis came in.
Ennis, didn't wrap
Ennis
up at
a,
all.
Ennis is a great player, by the way. Can we talk a little bit about him later?
His play was the most noticeable Buffalo Sabre on the ice last
night. And he's a rookie.
And he was, Elliot Friedman tweeted it, something along the lines of, he's not eligible for the Calder. But what he, you know, what he said is that the no rookie
he is eligible for the Calder.
He is eligible, but he wasn't nominated.
Oh, he
wasn't
nominated. Okay.
No rookie has improved their game throughout the course of the season more than Tyler Ennis.
His speed. Ooh.
Well, I mean, to his credit, Adrian Dater called him for the overtime winner on Twitter yesterday. But Ennis, I thought, was just dominant. He just looked like he could do what he wanted with the puck, and a young guy who's only going to improve.
Are we seeing a little bit of age with Kimmo Timonen?
He's been there, but he hasn't been anything to write home about. Best defenseman for Philadelphia this series has been Andre Mezeros.
Braden Coburn, I think.
No, I think Mezeros. I'm going to agree with Drew there, as Mezeros, especially yesterday, but Mezeros is logging 25 minutes a game.
Wait, you know who's logging 25 minutes a game? You just spoke about him. You would think, you think Buffalo, you think Tyler Myers is going to be is logging the most minutes. It's not. It's Chris Butler.
Yeah.
He's at 25 and a half minutes a game.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, a huge amount of ice time for, you know, a guy who, like Mike Harrington said, Mike Harrington, the Buffalo, said last week, for a guy who's really was in the doghouse, you know, until January, February. It's only recently he's come back.
You know, I was talking with Kyle Kozier, our scouting correspondent, yesterday, and I was talking about, you know, the questionable lack of depth on the Buffalo defense, and he made the point that that's probably why Lindy Ruff's losing all of his hair. But if you know, Buffalo has Miller back there, and he can shore up some of the problems that are caused by the defense, and their offense is pretty deep.
Philly still has
a good chance to win this series.
Well, if you watch that second period yesterday, the second period for Philly was dominant. They dominated Buffalo in that second
period.
They
have the offense to do that, Drew.
I know they have the offense to do it, but then why aren't they doing it? If they can turn it on, they're down 3-0. So you know
the team that's down always outshoots them.
I know. But it was more than just outshooting them, because they controlled the puck. They dominated in the Buffalo end. You could feel that this game was going to end up tied.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was a matter of can Buffalo get that fourth goal and pull it off. But if Philly can dominate for 20 minutes at a time, why can't they dominate for 30, 40, 50, and 60 minutes?
They don't seem to have the focus that they did last year.
I'm going to ask, I mean, I'm wondering if there's something in the locker room there again.
No, no, but that, Drew, but maybe the question also is I mean, does Philly need to be up against the wall to succeed? Right?
Well, desperate times call for desperate measures, so that could be very.
And you're missing your top two guys, which obviously when you're already missing one top guy and then you miss, and then Jeff Carter comes out, that's not going to help your psyche, is it?
No, but Jeff Carter has been, I mean, he was there in games 1, 2, 3, and 4. So let's not get carried away with it.
True, also. True.
I mean, it was not like they were dominating in the first four games and then they lost him and, oh, you know, woe to the world.
Yeah, but it doesn't help.
Well, look, Buffalo's lost Jason Pominville. It sounds like he's not going to play next game. We'll ask Anthony Sanfilippo about
Mike
that.
Mike Richards with 2 points in 5 games is one of the issues there, Drew.
I don't like that line. I don't like his line of Zhirdev and Versteeg. I don't like that line with Mike Richards.
I thought Zhirdev played one of the best games I've ever seen him play yesterday.
They don't play him a lot, though. They don't trust him.
I noticed him, but I only noticed him doing positive things, back-checking, playing hard. One of the only Flyers forwards that jumped out at me was Nikolaj Zhirdev.
I think Ezzie has a good point in terms of that line right now.
Were you watching the same game? Because I didn't see that, but okay. How many points does Zhirdev have in this series? One?
He has one goal. He's only played 3 games.
Yeah, points are overrated. Last night I thought he played a good game.
The best player is far and away Giroux. I mean, I think that's the best player.
Yeah. That's fine. I'm not saying.
But they do need Drew. I mean, what about Hartnell? And that's the key to me. What about Hartnell, Briere, and Leno?
Because that was the line that drove the bus last week.
Those three players last year were tremendous offensively. And where are they? I know Leno's a nifty player, makes some plays. Scott Hartnell is very, very, very hit or miss. And you're going to get, you know, hit or miss.
Yeah.
He's been a miss in this series.
That's right. Billy Leno, though, I'm surprised that one goal, No assists. Five games. I mean,
no assists. The no assist stands out to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's a playmaker. Yeah. And he's not making the plays. And you're right. That line has been poor.
Those three players. Those three players need to be better.
They do. And the goaltending, well, it's not going to get any better.
If you get better or not, the truth is they don't know. We know Ryan Miller is going to be solid.
You know Ryan Miller is going to. Nobody's worried about Ryan Miller.
You don't know.
If I'm Buffalo, I'm throwing the puck. You've seen it against Michael Layton, assuming he's in net. You can score from anywhere on the guy.
And when you're, and I don't care what anybody says, when you play in a team with good goaltending as opposed to poor goaltending, it changes the way you play.
You have no confidence.
You're less willing to take a risk on defense. You're less willing to pinch at the zone, pinch in the offensive zone. You're less willing to do a lot of things.
You have no confidence. It boils down to that. If I'm Buffalo, I'm shooting from everywhere. You don't know which bad goal is going to go in, but a bad goal is going to go in.
And, I mean, you know, without Pronger, Civret gets into the lineup. Matt Carl gets exposed a little bit more. Sean O'Donnell's lack of speed gets exposed a little bit more.
Yeah.
Let's not overlook the Phillies' drawbacks in terms of their defense when Pronger. Remember, Pronger isn't just a defenseman. Pronger's a defenseman who plays 30 minutes a game.
That's right. He's a defenseman and a half is what he is.
Right.
I mean, and without him, and you can't overstate how the impact of him not being there. But you know what? We'll talk about that coming up next segment with Anthony Sanfilippo. Let's go to break when we come back. Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is operating the R desk. You can join him at www.illegalcurve.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Our good friend, welcome back to the program, Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Anthony, good to hear from you again.
Hey, Drew, how you doing?
Doing very well, thanks very much. Anthony, let's start with the health updates of various players in this series. On the Philadelphia side, Chris Pronger, we haven't seen yet. Jeff Carter missed last game. And on the Buffalo side, Jason Pominville looked like he got cut by a skate.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see any of them for the remainder of the series at this point. Carter has a sprained MCL. He was up in the press box last night. Granted, he wasn't moving about with crutches, which I guess is a good sign, but he has a pretty severe limp. I don't see how he's going to be able to suddenly be cured, definitely by tomorrow, or even if it stretches to seven games, by Tuesday. So I think he's done. Pominville's injury was pretty nasty last night. Mm-hmm. I think that he's going to be done for a bit. Looks like he got cut on the back of his foot or near his heel.
Yeah.
He was on crutches and in a air cast last night. I think he's done. Pronger is the great mystery. You know, I was told all along that he was targeting a Game 5 return. That did not happen. Last night, I did stick around after the morning practice to watch him shoot some pucks, and he seemed really frustrated with the way he was shooting. Whether there was pain or he's not talking, so I don't know if it's pain or if it's an inability to get a good feel for the stick or holding the stick or grip. Whatever the case might be, it certainly frustrated him. He came off the ice and declared himself to his coaches as not ready yet. And who knows when he'll be ready. I still don't think he's going to play tomorrow, although with the desperation the Flyers are facing, I wouldn't be surprised to see him give it a shot. But at the same time, I don't think he's going to be in tomorrow either.
There's some talk that Pronger re-broke his hand. Can you provide any insight on that?
I'm not certain that he re-broke it. There's a lot of speculation about what exactly happened. I was told that he had, after the initial surgery, which he had a screw and a plate put in, that when he first took shots, slap shots at practice at the end of March, that what had happened there is there something went wrong with the plate and the screw. And that's not necessarily mean that he re-broke the bone. They had to go back in there, although the Flyers are denying this. But I was told that he had to go, the doctors had to go back in to adjust the plate and the screw and fix that, and which is what the setback was. Because the original plan was for him to play the last two regular season games and be ready to go for the series. But that going back in there set him back a couple weeks, which is why it was looked upon as game five as being the day he would be the game he would be back. Obviously, that still didn't happen. So I'm not certain if that second procedure has really limited his rehab. I mean, that might be what the issue is more than anything else. But I have not been told there was a second break, although there have been reports out that that was, in fact, the case. So who knows what it is? The Flyers are being real clandestine with it. So, but the fact still remains that Chris Pronger is unlikely to play Game 6. And, boy, they could really use him right about now, especially on that power play.
Anthony, after seeing all three Flyers goalies through the first five games of this series, was there a fourth goalie that I missed? Is Robert Esch back? Who do you think the Flyers will turn to in net? And you know, as the part B to that question, who do you personally think that they should turn to in net?
Yeah, guys, just be thankful that whichever team you get in Winnipeg is not going to have this circus going on. It's a real mess right now. I believe it will be the right decision. I think they'll go back to Boucher for one reason only. He gives them the best chance at this point to win a Game 6. It's not even about winning this series or winning a Stanley Cup. It's about winning one game. And right now, I think he gives you the best chance. They learned that Sergei Bobrovsky, while the kid has a lot of talent, just isn't quite ready for the rigors of the NHL playoffs. He really did not look good. Even in the game, in game one, we only allowed one goal. He really looked a little shaky. He was had communication issues. He wasn't. He really doesn't handle the puck well at all. So there's some concerns there. And then he obviously got blitzed in the beginning of game two, and they turned to Boucher. Boucher was really good game two, really good game three, really good game four, and then had a horrible start to game five. I think that you put aside the 15 minutes of bad play yesterday, and you go back to him. Because he's the one guy who has shown he played well in both games in Buffalo. He can handle this pressure. He's a veteran. He wants to get back in. He wants the opportunity to get a second chance and to redeem himself. Whereas Leighton is a guy who hasn't really played all year. He was okay yesterday until the overtime. He didn't really have a lot of shots come his way until the overtime period. And I thought he got a little lucky. I thought he looked a little rusty. And even after the game, he was one to say, oh, I'm sure Boucher will bounce back nicely in game six. So it's almost like his mentality is, I'm just the backup. I think if the Flyers want to win game six, they have to go back to Brian Boucher.
Anthony, the Flyers have a lot of offensive depth, but for whatever reason, it seems like they haven't really been able to expose, Leopold and Gregani being the second pairing in Buffalo, and then Montador and Weber. Why do you think that is?
I think Buffalo has done a real nice job of clogging the middle of the ice. And basically, the Flyers, the one thing for the Flyers, as offensively gifted as they are, they're not very good shooters. They're scorers. I equate it to basketball players, so guys who can know how to score, score in basketball, but don't always have the best field goal percentage. It's the same thing. The Flyers miss the net a lot. They have a lot of shots that get blocked, and it's a chronic thing. Teams just clog the middle against them and say, well, shoot all you want from the outside, and they will. And you might sneak one through from time to time, but you really have to work hard to get into the areas of the ice where you're going to get a better chance of scoring goal. Look, last night's a perfect example. The Flyers had 87 attempts last night. Only 39 got through to Miller. Wow. So that means that it was, 48 that were either blocked or missed the net entirely? 48 that were either blocked or missed the net entirely. Meanwhile, Buffalo had 50 attempts. The Flyers had almost as many shots that didn't get on goal as Buffalo did all night long. So that just goes to show you where the problem is for the Flyers right now. I think more so than goaltending and more so than anything else is the fact that they're not getting shots through to Miller. And that's what I think you got to give credit sometimes to the way that the other team's playing in front of their goaltender. They realize that they're not a very good defensive team with that, like you said, a second group and a third group that's kind of shaky. But so what they've decided to do is just say, you know what, we're going to sit here and just get in the way. And that's all we have to do, and we feel like we can hang in there with you. And it's worked so well so far for Buffalo through five games.
We're joined on the line by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Anthony, last year in the run to the Cup, the Ville Leino, Scott Hartnell, Danny Briere line was really the catalyst for the Flyers. So far this series, those three players have combined for 6 total points. Why aren't they performing? Why haven't they been able to get on track?
They've been like this for a while, guys. And with the exception of Briere, I mean, Briere's got three goals in this series. Mm-hmm. With the exception of Briere, that line has really just been not great for some time now. Hartnell has the ability to play a certain style, but again, he creates havoc in front of the net, and Buffalo's really cut off that middle. And Billy Lehno, what they're basically allowing him to do when he has the puck, are saying, you know what, you could do all your fancy skating and controlling the puck and everything, but we're not going to give you passing lanes. Mm-hmm. So those guys have pretty much been rendered, you know, inadequate at this point because, you know, they're unable to do what they do well. And they don't, the thing about Hartnell and Lehno is they don't have a second that they can do. Mm-hmm. They do one thing well each, and if both of those things are being taken away, then they don't serve as much of a purpose. So what you're seeing is, again, Buffalo just letting them do what they do on the outside and not letting them get to the areas of the ice that they need to get to. And that's why that line's not working. And I think that if you want to look at one other situation that's kind of similar, as you look at Giroux, Van Riemsdyk, and then it was Jeff Carter before the injury, mm-hmm. What you were getting there is that James Van Riemsdyk started playing into his size a little bit, which he had not done previously for a year and a half in the league or 2 years in the league. He's playing into his size, and it's really giving Buffalo a hard time. They can't control him when he's using his frame, and that's why he's had some success in this series against Buffalo. But what they did smartly there is they keyed on Giroux, taking Claude Giroux out of the game, and basically saying, all right, well, we'll take our chances with the kid Van Riemsdyk. Let's see if we can just negate Giroux, and that's kind of how they've kind of limited that line as well. So, again, credit Buffalo with a very smart system on how to take away the Flyers' best players and their abilities.
Anthony, the Flyers' power play is, I think it's 7.7%, which translates to 2 for 22, and that's through the first five games, obviously.
Yep.
How much of that can be attributed to the absence of Chris Pronger, and what do you think they have to do to turn it around?
Well, I mean, I think a little bit of it has to be, you can attribute to the missing Pronger. I mean, the way I look at it is that if you have Chris Pronger back there, he's not like the guy's going to go out and score a ton of goals because he's not a great goal scorer by any stretch of the imagination. But I'll tell you what you want to have. When he fires that big slapper from the point, I think you might get a player or two going, do I really want to get in front of that one? No, maybe not. I think that opens up chances for rebounds because those shots tend to get through. And he shoots it so hard that there's usually a rebound available for somebody in front. So, yes, they are missing Pronger. But let's go back to when Pronger was playing. The power play was struggling then, too. And the Flyers have a tendency to get really cute. Excuse me, on the power play. They like to pass the puck a lot. There was one point last night where they passed the puck 12 times before anybody took a shot on goal. Now, I understand sometimes you do have to do that to try and get the penalty kill box moving and a little out of position so you can get a clear shot. But sometimes it looked like they were passing up shooting opportunities to pass the puck again. It's almost as if somebody, you know, they're waiting for somebody else to shoot. Each player is waiting for somebody else to take that initiative. And I think that's what's hurting them right now without Pronger. They're running that diamond where they have one guy at the point, two guys on the circles, and two guys down low. Mm-hmm. It's just not working. Maybe they change that up and try something different. I don't know, but the fact is that this power play has been a chronic problem for the Flyers for quite some time.
I guess on a positive note, Anthony, there has been Andre Mezeros has really played well and been trusted by the coaching staff to the point where he's leading the defense in ice time so far in the playoffs. Can you speak a little bit about his positive contributions to the team?
Yeah, well, Mezeros has really become the poor man's Pronger. I mean, in a lot of ways, he's replacing the minutes that Pronger was playing in key spots, especially on that power play. And he scored a goal last night with a big shot from the point. And he's playing the penalty kill minutes that maybe he wasn't getting earlier in the year that Pronger would normally get. He's really been a strong two-way defenseman for them, and it's not something that's just come up lately. He won the team award for best defenseman on the team this year, and I think it was noticed throughout the season, and he progressively got better and better and better as the season wore on. Obviously, he was one of the better plus-minus guys in the league all season as well. Mm-hmm. So Mezeros has been a real nice addition. You know, you think you miss some Pronger, you say, oh, well, they're missing their best defenseman, and while they are, the Flyers' defense has been excellent in this series. I mean, really, when you break it down, Buffalo's had very few chances, which is a damnation on the goaltending, because Buffalo really hasn't had very many opportunities to score, and yet they're still scoring. So that tells you that, there is a problem in goal, and it's not really on the defensive side. So, but Mazzara's definitely, and even a guy who you guys probably won't even ask about, but I think has been very underrated for them defensively, is Braden Coburn. Braden Coburn is just, you know, a horse as far as minutes are concerned as well, and really just preventing teams from getting good opportunities, getting shots at all. So I think that those two guys especially have been really big for the Flyers and have kept them in a lot of ways in the series, because Buffalo's just not getting the chances because those two are on the ice.
Anthony, we'll let you go on this last question. Do you think the series is going back to Philadelphia for a Game 7?
That's a great question. And, you know, I would have all along up to this point, I've been saying I still think the Flyers are going to win. I still think, even when it was, you know, last night when they were down 3-0, I thought, you know what, all they really need to do is stem this a little bit and get the offense going the other way, and they can win this game. And they almost did come back and win it. I think that they have the ability to win Game 6. They have the talent to win Game 6. They know how to play with their backs against the wall. They're technically a better team than Buffalo. I'm just not convinced it's going to happen now. I've kind of lost any my confidence as a guy watching the team that this team's going to figure out a way to win. They might win Game 6. They might figure that out. I don't think they can win two in a row now at this point. I think Buffalo's going to advance and go on and play Washington in the next round.
You heard it here first. Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Anthony.
Thanks, Anthony.
Wow. When the Flyers beat writers are...
he knows them more than...
That's right. He knows, you know, when he says that he's skeptical about their chances, then you know that things are not looking very good in the city of brotherly love. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to break down the Vancouver-Chicago series. Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail will take some of your calls in the second half of the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. I mean, did we not have any Whitney Houston we could have played instead?
Drew, I want to talk about something right now before Remus comes on.
What's that?
I hope you know you're joking, because you're a good friend of mine. I really hope you didn't take that personally. I felt like you took that personally. I was just joking around, Drew.
I really didn't take it personally.
Tim, can we have some more some music that's a little bit more emotional?
No, it's okay, Tim.
I want to talk about my emotions right now.
And I want to get to the next talkie series. So
let's do it.
Remus, what's happening in the chat room right now?
First of all, Drew, this is Rick Astley. You don't diss Rick Astley. But anywho, you want to come on down to illegalcurve.com, and you want to check out the chat room. We're talking about all of the latest going on in the hockey playoffs. And also, visit illegalcurve.com and subscribe to us on iTunes. There's an iTunes link on the top right. You'll want to click on that. Even if you're listening to the whole show today and already heard it, download it anyways. It'll pump up our iTunes ranking.
Thank you, Remus. Michael Remus, available at www.illegalcurve.com, operating the R desk. Join some of your local hockey fans there for some chatter about that. You can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Guys, you're ready to go? You're settled in?
Let's do it, Drew.
Okay, let's do it. Vancouver and I didn't give you the cue there, Timmy. Vancouver and Chicago, if you can.
Vancouver Canucks versus the Chicago Blackhawks.
Should we all start choking at the same time?
It's been something, all right.
I mean, we'll talk about it more than just this segment. This is a quick segment, as we got Bruce Daubigan coming up after this one. But have you ever seen a potential Cup contender play two worse games? Back-to-back?
No.
Then the last two the Canucks have played?
That's a question you have. It's not losing two games in a row. It's losing the style that they have. Do Cup contenders, do team with a certain kind of pride even, Drew? Do teams with a certain kind of pride? Do teams that are going to win, that are supposed to be favorites to win the Stanley Cup, have no shows like that?
Never mind. I mean, it's one thing to lose that game in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it was a
Chicago
close game.
Was due for that. After three losses, Drew, course, Chicago was...
That was a 2-2 game. Due. That was a 2-2 game into the second period.
And yep. The point is, Drew...
That's the Vancouver Canucks choking right there.
And the point is, though, is that you're going to have to go home anyways. So, do you you play another game at home in game five, and then you pack it in, you have a nice little time off before the next series. What's the stats? Something like a team that has gone to the seventh game in the first round
never won
won the cup in like 20 or 30 years.
Something like that. It's because the toll it takes on you.
Because you're assuming that later on you'll be playing more games because you're playing better teams.
That's right. You're up 3-0. nobody expected you to sweep them, but you're up 3-0, so you know, it's like what Mike Babcock said. I don't know why Mike Babcock said something along those lines. I don't know why everybody says it's a best of seven. It's not. It's first to four.
Race to four, yeah.
Race to four. Just win four games, win them in the first four, and you're done. You know, the Canucks are playing... I can't believe how poorly they looked on home ice.
Drew, can we talk about Roberto Luongo, though, really quickly as far as he played? Do we have time for that?
I want to talk about... We'll get into the nitty-gritty of the series later on, maybe the segment after Bruce Daubigan.
Okay.
I want to talk about the mental weakness that this Canucks team has shown. Have you seen how fragile are they, do you think, mentally right now?
They look pretty fragile, Drew.
If Chicago goes out there and scores the first goal tomorrow evening... The game's available here on Sports Radio 1290, by the way. If you're in the car and you want to listen to it, it's available here. I believe 6 o'clock is
6:30 or 6 o'clock, yeah. Drew, you know, another thing that should be taken, you know,
6:30.
Chicago's actually a pretty young team. They have all the experience from playing in the playoffs, and I think they're worn down a bit. But a couple of things to be note. Chicago's actually a younger team than Vancouver.
Yeah.
Secondly, the wear and tear on their players, you need to take into account the fact that the past two games, their best players haven't played in the third period.
That's right.
This is one of the series where the time on ice is actually not very telling, because the good players have had their ice time cut down in the past third periods.
But Richie, Drew asked us if, you know, this is a psychologically fragile or weak team, and I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago played without Brent
totally
Seabrook.
Agree. Totally
they
agree.
Dominated yeah. Vancouver without Brent Seabrook. You talk about the Philly Flyers and missing Chris Pronger. You could say that Brent Seabrook's role on Chicago is just as important. But you've got Duncan Keith. Duncan Keith took his game to even another level for Duncan Keith. I mean, you know what? Luongo let in four goals, and then Schneider came in and let in the fifth goal. But I would say three out of those four goals were not Luongo's fault. I really thought Luongo was getting, you know, treated unfairly. I mean, there was a lot of traffic in front of him, and Drew getting back to the point of their psyche, they've been knocked out, the Canucks that is, have been knocked out by the Hawks twice in a row, and I really think that is playing in their minds right now when they're now down, not down, but they've lost two games in a row. And I think that Chicago, I mean, it's you know, you talk about momentum, I really think that the momentum is really swinging quickly, and I'm not saying that I think Vancouver's going to win the series. But
I don't know how you see that.
I think that they've...
Well,
I think
they do too. I mean, they have two shots to do it.
I think they've lost. Let's be honest. After those first three games, people were calling for a sweep. Now all of a sudden, it's can they even win the series?
When you get dominated that badly...
Well, a couple things. Let me cut in here. Drew Taves, his statement was quite interesting, I thought. You know, we're not exposing them for what they really are. That statement, I know we have to go because we have Daubigan coming up here, Bruce Daubigan, of the Globe and Mail. But I'd like to get into that after our interview with Bruce. I'd like to get into that quote, because I think as much as the hit on Torres changed the series, as much as a couple other things may have changed the series, I think that quote and Tave's subsequent play and leadership has keyed a comeback as well.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail, and after that, we're going to go into that quote, delve deep into the mind of Jonathan Taves. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.